Hello, what's going on? It's Doug here, and today I'm going to have like a little intro section here where I'll talk a little bit about the podcast, I'll talk a little bit about the shows coming up for January. That's right, I'm planning a little bit ahead, and the majority of the show is going to be a rebroadcast of the interview I did with Emily Odio Sutton, and she talks about print on demand in a giftable way. This was one of the most popular interviews of the year, so many of you probably heard it, but the reason why I definitely wanted to rebroadcast it anyway, it's been on my list. So many folks in the audience still wanted, you know, dabble on the side. It's one of those origin stories of the show, the podcast. Everything that I ended up doing online was through a side hustle, and the majority still of the audience, as far as I could tell, because I'm just assuming, the majority of the audience wants to know, hey, what kind of stuff is working these days? And this seems to be one of the best ways to get started with a low amount of initial investment, which is even cheaper than back in the day starting a niche site where you had to get hosting and a couple other things. This seems to be a little cheaper, and you also don't necessarily have to have a very high skill level. The downside of that is because the barrier of entry is low, that means potentially there's more competition because more people can just get started. It doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It just means, hey, a lot of people can get to that sort of entry level portion. And like many things, the more you do it, the more the compounding effect takes hold. And then maybe like, because you've been doing it longer, you are able to execute better. Maybe you have a different workflow or something like that. You have more products on your store, whatever. So this is one of those highly effective things that you probably can get started with and then grow if you want to. You may figure out, hey, I really don't like this part of the business, but I'm really good at this other part, and you could focus on that. So some of the reflection for today is around the topics of the podcast. And this past year, I wouldn't say struggling, but I was searching. I wasn't sure what I wanted to talk about. There were things that I wasn't as interested in. I think it was in 2024. It was more on the YouTube side, but in 2024, I was doing content around AI. I was like, oh, I could pivot the channel into more AI focus. And some of those videos actually did really well. And I wasn't super into it. And from some of the other topics that I've talked about, especially in the fall of this year, the second half of 2025, I have been more negative about AI. So kind of a roller coaster ride. The whole point being, yeah, I don't think going in the AI direction was going to be viable. So I bailed on that fairly early after a handful of videos. Even though they were successful, I wasn't super interested in continuing to do research and testing out different tools or even developing tools using AI, going the SaaS route, going the coding route, more solutions-based versus anything else. Basically, the content I was focusing on was how to use some of the tools for the things that I potentially was working on. But as I work on fewer things, it's less interesting for me to just make up assignments for myself to try to use the tool to solve a problem that I don't actually have. All that to say, there was a portion of the year where I was working through the ideas and working through what I was going to cover on the podcast. And I was working through it live on the podcast. So I asked for feedback, and I can't remember, and I didn't look up the email, but someone did say, it is interesting to hear some of these things, but they said, if I remember right, they said, I don't really want to hear about how you're not sure if this podcast is kind of a waste of time. Should you be doing this? And I understand that. Many times when I want to cover a topic, especially if it's something that I'm working through, I don't really want to mention it too much in great detail until I've got on the other side. It doesn't mean I'm not trying to capture some of the thoughts along the way, because it's easy to forget the struggles you were going through once you figured it out. All that to say, I was working through it before I figured it out. It's much easier to have like a conclusion done and then tell the story. So I think now I kind of have figured it out, at least great holding pattern. So number one, I realized that if you're, you know, keep certain things separated is needed, which is a pure judgment call. The other thing that I know from creating content for many years is what some people dislike, other people really like. So literally I got an email from my other podcast just today. Someone was talking about how they really enjoyed the certain aspect of an interview that I did. Someone else wrote how they really disliked that same aspect. It's very interesting. It's very interesting, but it also means like if someone has like a polarizing opinion, sometimes things are just a bad idea, but if someone has a polarizing opinion or way of speaking or something like that, some people might relate to it. So it's a balance, of course, but it's something that I am thinking about. All that to say, I think doing a handful of interviews, keeping it light and enjoyable for myself is a great approach, and it is still sustainable. The other thing is, you know, leaning into some of the topics that maybe I've covered before, but are somewhat evergreen and helpful, because sometimes these are meandering stories that have no real point, and and I'm aware of that. So some of the episodes coming up, I watch a lot of YouTube, and there's some formulas that tend to show up. One is five things I learned about blah, and it could be positive things, it could be negative things, it could be around like whatever specific topic. I could probably do five things I wish I knew every single month and just pick a different topic area. Although I didn't actually think of that until now, but that can be a good way to add some constraint where it's clear one episode per month, it is going to be five things type episode. They make a good headline and it's clear and discreet. And because you declare that it's going to be five things, people know what to expect. And then it also forces me, hey, do an outline. There's going to be five bullet points. Just go from there. Keep it simple. All right. So there's going to be one of those. And I think it's going to be five things I wish I knew when I started working online. These, the ones that I'm going to mention, including that one, will come out in January, but I'm not 100% sure which day or what order or anything like that. So another is setting goals for 2026. And now that I'm saying it, that one's probably going to be the first one. So next week, that one should come out. Another one is around focusing and not just being busy. The inspiration for that one was from a former student of the courses I had. They actually were struggling on like how to be productive, essentially, and get things done. They've gone up and down as far as like their success level, and with a full-time job and a family, and then like the volatile income that they were seeing online, they were just like, I'm a little scattered and I need help. So that's another area. I only have three listed right now, so I need to come up with one more to round out January, but that's enough to get me started. And the other area that seem to have more interest, at least from a comment standpoint and from emails that I received. It was around project management and really the productivity stuff. So again, these are kind of like more evergreen ideas, maybe stuff I've covered before, but it doesn't mean I, you know, can't share different stories, or maybe my opinion has changed. Maybe just republishing it in a different format makes more sense. Again, maybe I share different examples or stories, but planning ahead, you know, it's good. I'm pointing down at a notebook that I have in front of me. So that is helpful. So, all right. I think that's it for today. Thanks for popping in. We will send it to the rebroadcast with Emily Odio Sutton, and you can check out, I think she has the free workshop, and I'm an affiliate for the full-blown course. So she has a course out there associated with some of my friends. I think it's hosted over at Gold City Ventures, and I'm an affiliate. So if you do sign up, then I get a commission, but there is a free workshop, and you could learn a ton from listening to the interview here. And then if you check out the workshop, you learn even more. And then if it looks like a good fit for you and you think, hey, I can learn something from Emily, then certainly check it out. And I appreciate the support. If you do make a purchase, again, you can get a ton of value just from the free content that's out there. And I also did an interview with her, I think in 2024. So if you really wanted to go deep, you could check that one out as well. Happy New Year, and we'll catch you next week. We'll talk about setting goals for 2026. Hopefully it'll be a project management type of approach so that it's useful and easy to follow. And I'll stop rambling now. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. My name is Doug Cunnington, and today we're going to talk about print on demand over on Etsy. And I have my friend Emily Odio Sutton back on the show. We're going to get an update. It's been a few months. So Emily, how's it going today?
It's good. It's good. How are you doing?
Doing awesome. And we were just catching up, and I thought, you know what? We should hit record and go ahead and get started, or else we're going to talk for 45 minutes. So it's good to have you back on the show. And when you were on last time, I think you had like one more day of work left or something very close. So how's life been over the last few months?
Yes, that was right at that time as everything was shifting and I was going full-time, self-employed, mompreneur, all the things. And it's been great. Honestly, it's been better than I could have ever dreamed of, expected. It was something that I had thought about and envisioned for a couple years now, but until you're actually there and you're like, oh, wow, I don't have to clock in this morning. I don't have to report to a meeting. It has been kind of wild to adjust. And I'm actually surprised. I've been telling people I'm surprised by how quickly I adjusted to this lifestyle. And it took about a month. I would say I went full-time self-employed the end of January. I think February into March, I was having a mild panic every other day. Like, what did I do? Is this the right thing? And then after some time, that kind of wore off, which was great. And now I feel like I've fully settled in and I'm feeling really, really great about it. There are definitely, you know, there are people from my previous job. I think I'd mentioned I loved my job actually, which made it really hard. So I still talk to them. I had a coffee chat on Zoom with one of my friends this morning from my previous job. And I think you realize you can keep some of those connections and keep going. The funny thing is, you know, I tell people all the time, I still work just as much, but it's great because I'm really just doing it on my own time and I can do it around my kids. So overall, it's been an awesome adjustment and I'm just so glad that we ended up taking that leap.
Yeah, a month to decompress is pretty quick. I talk to a lot of people that have jobs that they don't enjoy. So in fact, just recently I chatted with a friend he's been early retired for about 4 to 5 years. And it was only been in the last year after much therapy that he's not having like stress dreams.
Yeah.
So that kept going along for a little while. So
very cool. Congratulations. Obviously a big step when you're able to go full time on this stuff. Did you have a big adjustment managing your time just in general after, you know, you kind of had like a compressed amount of time that you were able to do, you know, all the work that you were doing on your online business? Now it's like kind of wide open, and sometimes that freaks people out because now they don't have the same structure or constraints. It's weird how constraints could force you to be a little bit more efficient. So how's that going?
I almost feel like I went the opposite direction. It was almost overcompensating, like, okay, now I have to do this all day. And it's almost been more of an adjustment to be able to pull back some. So, you know, my daughter gets off the bus at 3 o'clock, and I was so used to working from 3 to 5 and kind of keeping her entertained at the same time. And now it's like, oh no, my goal was to be done with work at 3 o'clock and be able to take her to her appointments, take her to swim, do all the things. And so it's almost been more of an adjustment for me to stop working. And I think what helped me for so long while I had a full-time job and while I was doing this was really having great time management. I'm a little bit type A, a little bit, I am firstborn daughter syndrome. Like, I'm very much, you know, do all the things, do it on time, do it early. And so I've really almost had to work on the opposite, which is, you know, I don't have to work at night now. Before, I had to work in the evenings because I had a job. And now my husband's like, you don't have to do that. And so I try to create to-do list. And once that to-do list is done for the day, I can be done. And that's almost been harder than anything else. So I haven't had as much of a challenge with staying on top of things or being productive. It's really been reprogramming my brain to allow for less hours. And it's been great. Like, my husband and I are back to watching our shows in the evening and, you know, being able to relax and just not look at anything work-related, not look at my phone. And so it's been, that's probably honestly been the biggest adjustment, is just rewiring how my brain operates in that way.
Again, it sounds like you've identified things and adjusted pretty quickly. Part of that type A, and like,
yes,
you're taking the feedback and adjusting quickly. So that's great. Let's shift into business. So you have a couple shops of your own, and I'm curious, like, how business has been, and more sales, less sales over the last few months here.
Yes. So April and May are normally the second highest sales period of the year outside of November and December. So things in April and May have been going really well. Things transparently are a little bit down from last year, but I think there's a lot of different factors for that just everywhere for that reason. But I expected that. And so I've been trying to work on some things to kind of offset that. So I've been looking and doing a ton of research on different products. So I've launched a few different types of products in my shop that are going well. Looking at different niches, I should say, like occasions, things like that, where people are going to spend money no matter what. So think of like weddings, kids' birthday parties, things like that, where families, people, parents are going to be spending money. So I'm trying to think strategically about those things, regardless of kind of how the economy is or what people are spending money on, trying to find ways to have products that serve those audiences. But sales have been, they've been going well. They tend to follow a very similar pattern. January is typically low after the holidays. February, maybe a little bit higher than that. You have Valentine's Day, things like that. And then it slowly goes up through May. The summer tends to slow down, and then it goes back up in the fall to a peak. So now that I've done it for 2 years, I have those expectations and I know how to plan for that. And this year I have the time and the capacity to find products and ideas that can kind of offset some of that too, or help raise those numbers some.
Got it. And it sounds like this is mostly around the giftable side of the business. Okay. And can you describe the giftable idea versus, you know, other products that people might have on Etsy?
Sure. So many, when thinking about print on demand, and for anyone who maybe didn't hear our first episode or hasn't talked learned about print on demand before. It's basically a fulfillment method. So you create a design and you put it on a product like a mug, a t-shirt, a candle, something like that. And a print partner does all the fulfilling of that order once someone purchases it on Etsy. So when thinking about giftable, a lot of times, a lot of what you'll hear in the print on demand or POD space is about apparel. You'll hear a lot about t-shirts, sweatshirts, tank tops, things like that. And when I first started, I was doing the same thing, but then quickly realized there was a lot of power in selling gifts on Etsy. And so it's a lot of times you can sell kind of the same product, but it's the way you position it. So positioning your products as something that can be gifted to someone else. And what's great about this giftable concept is there's less returns, because with apparel, you have a lot of sizing issues. People don't like how it feels, or the fit is too small, too big. And so with gifts, if you're thinking tote bags or candles or ornaments, you know, you don't have those same sizing issues. And then the other thing is you're more targeting someone, a customer who's coming on Etsy looking for something for someone else. And so you're able to just appeal to a lot of different customers in that way and provide a gift opportunity for them that they can't find at Target or Walmart or anywhere down the street. So that's kind of the giftable idea. And the other big thing is Etsy is pushing the platform as being a go-to for gift products. If you see any of their recent commercials, all of the taglines are about being unique gifts for the people you love, or meaningful gifts for the special person in your life. And so that is really playing into what Etsy is pushing the platform as. So by using keywords or positioning your product to be giftable or a gift, you're really helping Etsy and pushing that idea. And so that's, it's taken me time, you know, I've been doing this for a little over 2 years, but when I first started and started getting some reviews on some of those products, like candles or ornaments, like, oh, this person loved this as a gift. It took some time, but that light bulb eventually went off, you know, oh, this is a whole strategy that I can use to position these things as gifts for other people. And so I think that's the power of approaching it from that way. Doesn't mean there's not opportunity in t-shirts. There's so much opportunity in t-shirts, but I think for new sellers, this is an avenue that can help you stand out, because there's not as many people going this route. When you watch anything print on demand on YouTube, it typically starts out with selling a t-shirt. So this is kind of just a unique way to sell something that's a little bit different, but also positioning it in a way that aligns with what Etsy is trying to be as a whole platform.
And I'm in the course, and we'll link up so people could check out your course. I'm a horrible student now that I've been out of school okay. for a while. So I literally did the t-shirt, you know. So I have my shop set up super fast. You walk through everything step by step. So I literally did it in like under 2 hours. I already had a design and was able to, you know, get everything set yeah. up really quickly. And it, just caveat, like, the reason why I set up a t-shirt is like people were like, hey, I want to buy that t-shirt. So like that's yeah. why I did it. Audience out there, I'm not a complete moron. but it is interesting on the gift side of the house. So like how do you literally just put it like gift in the title or description, or how do you literally position it as a gift yes. versus like something for myself?
Yes, absolutely. So part of it, yes, is using, and Etsy tells you they want you to use the word gift in your title, in your keywords, in your listing. So that for sure is a given. What we teach in the course is a lot about how to create and position your product in that way. So it's thinking about who might be receiving this product. So let's say we're thinking about it's the end of the school year, getting a lot of orders for end of the year teacher presents, right? So if you're selling an ornament for a teacher, which ornaments, FYI, sell year round, and you will see crazy sales numbers this time of the year for things like teacher ornaments. So if you're thinking about an ornament for a teacher, you can, in your keywords and in your description, in all of that, in your listing, it could be an end of the year teacher gift. It could be a holiday present for teachers. You can do it could be a coworker gift. A lot of times teachers will give gifts to each other at the end of the year for their coworkers or for the holidays. It could be gifts from the PTA. So you're thinking about who might be receiving this gift, which in this case would be teachers or coworkers, but then also what might they be receiving it for? So in that case, it would be a holiday, end of the year, teacher appreciation, coworker appreciation, all of that. And then what is the product itself, which is, you know, an ornament. So I think you're kind of thinking about it from all angles, like who's giving it, who's receiving it, what are they receiving it for? And you're really just typing those into your title and in your description. And you're just kind of tackling all those different avenues in that one listing. And it can sound a little bit complicated, but when I break it down for students, it's what are people typing in the search bar? So if you were to go to Etsy and you were going to buy a teacher gift for your child's teacher, you know, what would you type in? Oh, teacher thank you gift. Great. Okay, that's a good one. Teacher appreciation. You know, so it's just thinking about what would people naturally be searching for. And then that's really the big part about how you position it and you put those words in your listing. And we walk through all of that in the course also in detail. But that's how you create your title. That's how you write some description and your keywords in your description, your tags. And also, you know, with your design, of course, as well, you want to make sure that it makes sense for that gift. But really, that's kind of how you can help position that product in a way that people will find it.
Super interesting. And I think I had a little flashback of one of my early courses, and you had a super similar exercise, which it's not like rocket science, but you described it a little bit here. Essentially, it's like you have a profession or some avatar that you're thinking of, these different occasions, and then like one other element in there. So you could have these crazy combinations, and then you could just think of like perhaps more professions, nurses, doctors, plumbers, electrician, whatever. You mix it in. Sometimes it doesn't make sense, right? Your electrician or your plumber appreciation gift. It doesn't make sense, but I'm sure they'd be appreciative of, yes. of you giving them that mug. But it's a great way to just like expand this out. And you may think, I got like two ideas. But if you go through the exercises and you think about it and step away and sleep on it and come back in a week, all of a sudden you're going to have more ideas than you're going to be able to create, or it'll take you months to like go through and design these and like get everything rolling. So super cool. Do you have anything else to expand on that? No question, but it's just like once you get going, like you have too many ideas, right?
Yes. And that often can be the hard part. It's at the beginning. I see a lot of people that are like, I just don't even know what to sell. And so we go through those exercises, you know, what do you have familiarity with? Like, what's your background or what are you an expert in? And then I'll often hear, well, I'm not an expert in anything. And I'm like, okay, well, you definitely are. Like, what have you done a hobby before? Have you played a sport? Have you had a job? Have you been a mom? Have you been a daughter? Have you been a cousin? You know, like there's so many avenues there. And that's one of my favorite parts of the course is we call it the micro niching workbook. So it's a Google spreadsheet. And we literally walk you through how to do this. And I think when students go through that, they do see how many ideas there are, and then it also becomes overwhelming at that point. So a lot of what we do is work on focus. So let's start with one. Let's start with one idea, one customer that you have in mind, and one product. And let's get really good at listing that product, designing for that product, and listing for that customer. And then from there, let's expand that out to a different customer. And then from there, you know, it keeps going. And I think once I see people get into that rhythm and have that focus and kind of get over that hurdle at the beginning, they really start to see that progress happening, which is super exciting.
So in our other interview, which we'll link to, you described the Printify, right? So Printify is a platform that hooks people that are trying to get print-on-demand products made to vendors across the country, right? So there's a lot of different suppliers. It's not just one, and you're able to work with these different suppliers. It integrates really well into Etsy. Did I describe that roughly accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So one thing that I ran into, and I'm not quite sure, is how to solve this. So again, I'm on the t-shirt side, but this applies across the board, is quality. So I have gotten, you know, t-shirts in the past where it just, you know, it's rough. If maybe if you wash it 1,000 times, it's going to be okay. And then others where they're so soft and thin, you can't dry them. Like you have to really treat them delicately. So there's some nice Goldilocks zone in there. How do you figure out like the right quality level? Do you have to test them out? I kind of looked at the pricing and I assume, well, that's a pretty good judge. If the pricing is not the cheapest and not the most expensive, it's probably pretty good. I picked a hoodie for another one and I was like, you know what? I want the hoodie to be nice. So this is going to be an expensive one. I know it's a decent brand, so I assume because of the pricing, it should be a, you know, if it's a $60 sweatshirt, it's probably decent. So how do you determine quality across the board?
So one, I would say free way that I did this at the beginning, because I was selling apparel early on, is I watched a lot of YouTube videos. And there are some great print-on-demand creators out there who do, they get samples and they do these reviews on YouTube. And so I watched a lot of those. I watched a lot of different creators to see what products they highly recommended. And then I also, one other option is, depending on what stores you have nearby, some Michaels or different, you know, craft stores will have those free, or not free, sorry, not free, but plain blank t-shirts. They have a whole aisle of them. And so once before, I have gone and just looked at them and just gotten an idea of what the quality was like, what the heaviness was like. Now, for example, and then the other thing, sorry, you can do is look on Etsy, because if you're selling in a certain category, you're going to see very similar t-shirts. So number one, if you're selling in the bachelorette niche, for example, comfort colors t-shirts trump all. You're going to see comfort colors everywhere. And so you also then have to be in line with what the market is wanting. And if comfort colors is, it's kind of like an oversized tee, if that's what you want and that's what your customer wants, that's probably what you need to sell. If you look at something like the teacher niche, you're going to see a lot of the Bella and Canvas t-shirts, 3001. And so I learned pretty quickly, those were some of the popular t-shirts that were being offered. So a lot of it too, you can see on Etsy just for free. If you just scroll and look at some different searches, even if you typed in t-shirts for women or t-shirts for men, you might see some common patterns there. So I did a lot of that as well, read a lot of reviews, watched a lot of YouTube content, and just got an understanding. I did that also with mugs. There's a lot of different mugs out there. And on YouTube, you can find a lot of videos reviewing products, samples. They'll show you how it's packaged. And then the last thing I did was I did order a couple samples of different products that I sold. But I didn't do that until a little bit later. Once I had started making a little bit of money in my shop, I decided to order a couple samples, and I've done that. And that's also been great. But honestly, watching the content, you could go to a craft store, you can look on YouTube or look on Etsy, see reviews, see what's popular. And that kind of all helped me form my opinion on which products I should be selling.
Okay. Makes sense. And one of my other friends, he was like, oh yeah, there's this YouTube creator. They recommend like the good shirts or whatever, but I'm a bad student. Like I said, follow my lead here.
It's okay.
So, okay. Very good. Now, another thing with my shop, I'm using this as my own like coaching session.
No, this is great.
So as I've established, lazy. All right. So lazy, and I am doing this for fun. I have another podcast, and that's what the shirts and hoodies and stuff that I've created so far. The thing is, I have some, number one, like photos that I've actually like done print on demand stuff on another platform before, but I was like, you know what? I want to simplify things. And I know it will be a sacrifice, probably algorithmically. There's probably some other issues with it. However, I want simplicity. And technically, I know if I'm going to set up, I'll just make up an example. I do homebrew beer and I'm a beer judge and stuff. So let's say I want to have my podcast products, which are t-shirts and maybe things related to financial independence. But then I'm also into beer and I just want to lump them all into one shop. They are unrelated. Some will be interesting to like a one group and basically it's just a bunch of random stuff. So how much of an issue is that? And again, like that's probably what I'm going to do just for simplicity. I don't want to have multiple shops set up. Can you talk about that? Just having like a wide range of unrelated things?
Yeah. So there's a couple things that I typically advise. And I think most Etsy coaches and people who have had success in the space would advise. So it's interesting because I would call my print-on-demand shop a general shop. So I sell to a lot of different customers, a lot of different niches, a lot of different occasions for gifts, things along those lines. But I think having some cohesive elements is helpful. So for example, if you're using the same mockups, if you're selling similar product types. So if someone did come into your shop, it doesn't look like two different shops put together. But if you're using, say you're selling a financial independence t-shirt and a beer t-shirt, but if you put them on the same mockup, you know, when someone's scrolling, you're still going to see some of that cohesiveness because it's not going to look like two very different things. So I think there's some ways you can still have a shop that looks unified and like it's supposed to be there. I also would go out on a limb, and I haven't researched this, that there probably would be some overlap between people who are interested in beer and people who are interested in financial independence. Like I'm thinking of my husband or even me for that matter. So, you know, you probably would still have customers that overlap in that way. So I think that would be fine. But typically what I tell people is if you're going to sell to a lot of different types of people, or even if it's just two different, you know, main areas, having some elements that make it feel like it still looks like it's all in the same shop and belongs together. So that can be just visually with your mockups. That can be product type. So if you're only selling t-shirts and hats, maybe your sweatshirts, you know, that's still going to look like it all fits together. I even recommend the same thing if people are selling print on demand and digital products. I get this question a lot. Can you sell both in the same shop? Because I work with a lot of students who sell both printables and POD. And my answer is it depends. So if you're selling things that go to the same type of person, like if you're doing career-oriented print-on-demand products for nurses and teachers and accountants, and your digital products are also for the same market, then that makes sense to sell together. But if you're selling printables for moms to do on holidays, and then you're selling accountant t-shirts, well, that doesn't really go so well together. So I think it just depends on what you're selling and what that looks like. But I would say if you're going to put them all in the same shop, have something that makes them look cohesive if some were to come in. My last thing I will say on this is for most people to know that most Etsy buyers are not even coming into your shop. So for the most part, they're finding your product on a search page on Etsy, and they're not necessarily coming to scroll and shop and look at what else you have to offer. Now, sometimes you do, but on the whole, most people find you on a search page, they click on your listing, and they add it to their cart. So in that way, there's not so much weight that has to be put on it, but I do recommend being cohesive. And I would say to think of your shop, if it was a real storefront, if you had a physical store on a main street somewhere, right? And someone walked in, even if you were selling different types of things, what would help them feel like they could go together? And that's just some of the visual elements that I'm talking about and making sure it still has some of that cohesive look to it.
Okay. Great answer. With the, I guess, this is more about branding. Like, is that accurate? Like Etsy really doesn't care from an algorithmic standpoint. It's not going to hurt you if someone you know, if you have the, again, the wide range of products in a general sense, it's really just so like, if someone landed on your full shop and they scrolled through, they're like, oh, these look the same. You sell t-shirts in a few different areas, that sort of thing. So just to be clear, it's all on the branding side currently.
Yes. So I would say branding is a big part of it. The other thing I would say for someone who's new to Etsy or new to print on demand also is it's hard to become an expert in something when you're doing 100 different things. So part of it too is just getting better, right? So if you are selling a t-shirt and you're selling a tote bag and you're selling a banner and you're selling a doormat and you're selling a mug to 10 different types of customers, you're not really gaining any momentum anywhere because you're going in 100 directions. So the other part of it, and I will say, we don't really know how the Etsy algorithm works. They tell us very, very little. There are things you can assume or you can, you know, wonder, but I would say more so on what you can control, which is getting really good at what you're listing and understanding your target audience. And that takes digging in deep and doing it over and over and over again. And so if you're doing 100 things, you're really, you know, it's that phrase, like you're not an expert in anything. And so trying to become an expert, and that's why I always say start with one product, maybe two, start with one niche or customer or two, and start there and really focus there. And part of it is that you just get better quicker because you're focused on what you're doing, as opposed to trying to do 100 things. So yes, it's definitely branding, but with new sellers, it's also that learning and that becoming, improving and becoming better at what you're doing by having that focus also.
Very good. And I think what I'm going to end up doing, which again, people don't do what I'm doing, but I think what I'll end up doing is I do have a couple ideas for a few other t-shirts in the financial independence space. I have my photography where there'll be some prints that people can get. That's obviously like somewhere else. And then there's some giftable stuff that like I have some ideas about that too. Yeah. And I think the people that would end up on the full shop view would like know me from podcast. So they have like sort of a personal interest and they see, you know, I've talked about beer and I've talked about national parks and I've talked about other stuff. So like for them, it does complete the picture. It makes sense from a branding standpoint. Random people that end up on one product via search, they don't care anyway. They're just looking for the one product and that's okay. And if they happen to stumble around and find other stuff, then, you know, they could figure out the brand and like, why is this a podcast like t-shirt? So that makes sense to me. And, you know, I'm not going to try to over-optimize in any one area anyway. Okay. Does that seem like a reasonable approach? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned with the new time that you have, you've been doing a little more experimenting and testing out other products. I think you mentioned a few. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Like anything new where you're like, wow, I didn't know this existed. I'm glad I had the time and space to think about this.
Absolutely. Yes. So as I mentioned, you know, with this new time, it's been really fun because I felt like last year, obviously working full time and I was growing my business in other ways, my space to think creatively, to design, to pour into my Etsy shop was limited. And this year, in the last few months, now I'm able to really dedicate so much more time to what I love about selling on Etsy, which is I'm a research nerd. I love digging into what's selling. I mean, sometimes I was on there yesterday and I texted a friend who also sells on Etsy and I was like, can you believe this has sold 20 times this week? Like it's still sometimes baffling to me, the things that you'll find and the little golden nuggets here and there. It's always like a scavenger hunt. And so it's really fun and fulfilling to get back to why I love selling on Etsy to begin with and doing print on demand, because love that research. I love the designing, the simple designing that you can do. And I've been experimenting more with using AI, which has been fun. I hadn't had time before to really dig in to using AI tools. I've recently been using a tool called Playground, which is a design tool, specifically using AI and Chat4o, which has been really fun because I'm not a designer, but I have ideas in my head. And so it's fun to be able to use prompts and words to then create the visual that I'm seeing in my head. So that has been something I've had the space and the time to do, which has been really exciting. And I have time just to be creative and to, you know, create new things that I didn't think I really could before. So in terms of products, I've definitely been experimenting with a few different things. There's different types of journals out there, like leather journals and things like that, that I hadn't had time to really, because when you're listing a new product type, it takes time. You have to really understand how to design for it. You have to understand how to create the listing photos for it and to create new size charts and keywords and things like that and understand that market. And so I did that. Leather journals has been a big one. The other thing, like I mentioned, I'm looking a lot now at the event space to kind of go with my giftable products as well. So thinking about how do I complement these gifts and or create keepsakes for big events like weddings and birthdays. And again, things that are a little bit more economy proof, like it doesn't really matter. People are going to spend money on their weddings for the most part. So looking at some of those areas, things like banners for occasions, and then you can have matching mugs and tote bags in your shop as well that go with them. So having these complementing items. And so those have been really fun to spend time researching, designing for. And so, yeah, those are a couple of the different product types I've been doing, a couple of different areas that I've been focused on in the last couple of months. But like I said, it's just been really fun because people will often say like, well, why do you like selling on Etsy and Etsy's oversaturated and you know, all these things. And I'm always like, it's just really fun. Like I spend time just designing, like my daughters will come in and be like, oh, that's so pretty. Like, you know, what is that for? And it's just fun to create these things that people across the country then turn around and buy. And you're like, my brain still, my mind is always still blown. Every time I get, like, people think I'm over-exaggerating, but every time I get an order, I'm like, I can't believe I made that on Canva and someone is turning around and spending money on this. So it's just a really cool and fun business. And I love that I've had the capacity this year to just get back to focusing on that and really creating new things and finding new ways to create designs, new ideas. And that's been really, really energizing over the last few months.
Pretty cool. And a lot of the audience is very familiar with keyword research, although many of us, I mean, we stopped building websites and all that kind of stuff. But like what you're talking about is like a perfect analogy of, I mean, it's sometimes literally the same thing where you're like literally doing keyword research, but you're coming through the data, you're finding underserved areas, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So pretty interesting. Yep. We talk a lot more about it in the first interview, so people should definitely check that out.
Yep.
The event area makes a lot of sense to me. And I wonder also, I mean, some of the products like almost inherently, like someone that's getting like a leather journal, like they're more on the upscale side of it, right?
Yep.
So are you thinking about that as well, where you're like, not only is the event space potentially like a little bit more like recession proof, but like basically like wealthy people are going to spend money on like a big wedding or a big birthday party and they're going to get these like high-end products. So do you actually look for like high-end products where it's like, yeah, people are going to buy, people searching for these have money to spend and they actually don't want to buy like the cheapest option. They want to get a premium option.
Yes, I definitely am always thinking of having a variety, or if a product, say, comes in different sizes, you know, I always offer a variety of sizes. So I'll have people who will get the smaller size because that's what they're able to do. But then I have people who will come in and spend $90 on a banner, which baffles me. But that's what they want to do. And that's where they can spend their money. And so I think having kind of a balance. I still have a lot of what I would say lower cost, you know, gift products. Most of my shop is these giftable products. And I would say a lot of them are affordable for the average person. They are definitely a little bit higher cost than if you were to buy, say, an ornament at Target in December, but because it's unique and it's personalized. And so you do have the ability to upcharge for that. But I do think it is important as you're growing your Etsy business to have that variety, because I do think you want to be able to have those higher ticket items and be able to accommodate those people where they are and those people who can spend more money. And that's great, because having that higher average order value, you know, getting an order for $90 for one item, that's great, right? As opposed to getting five different orders on a smaller ticket item. So I think having that balance is good. I always tell people though, if you're just starting out in the space, you know, don't worry about that yet. You know, we just want to get good at what you're doing first. And then I think we can have those conversations. But I do think it's definitely strategic to consider the audience and making sure you're thinking about these things when you're building your shop. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Okay, cool. And anything else with like product types or new things that you've been working on, anything like that?
I would say there's so much opportunity out there. I've recently, in the course, we just launched a few lessons with a tool called Anywhere POD. And I am absolutely loving this platform to, if you are a lazy print-on-demand seller, it's a great kind of one-stop shop. It takes out a lot of steps, but they have access to other print providers that I haven't used before. And I'm actually going to start getting some samples to test them out. So for example, platters, they're like these ceramic platters for Father's Day. Like right now there are shops selling one platter, $40,000 in revenue in May so far, like insane numbers on a very simple platter that talks about being a barbecue plate for dad or something for Father's Day. So there are some giftable products like that that I have on my list to be exploring kind of going into the second half of the year, thinking about Q4. It begins last month. You know, I started already kind of planning, okay, what else do I want to be incorporating before the holiday season? And so Anywhere POD has some of these other options that I haven't explored before. And so I'm really excited to do that. And with the students in our course, be able to talk about those with them too as potential opportunities. So trying to think of some unique things that not everyone is selling. And that's really been the purpose of our course, is providing a different avenue for students to sell print on demand that isn't the go-to apparel or whatever the norm is out there. And so trying to find some of these other unique things where the market, there's just not a lot of people doing it. And so how do we capitalize on that? And there's some pretty neat giftable products, acrylic, these like acrylic stands. I don't even know how to explain them, but you can put graphics on them and give them for any occasion. And there's a bunch of different like acrylic options out there that you can give. And that's something else that I've looked at also. So I think just trying to look at some of these areas where there's not as many people selling them, honestly.
I think the last time we talked, I was like getting ideas while we were talking, and then I forgot to like write them down. It's pretty funny because I was like, oh, I have another idea. And I was like, I thought of this last time and I didn't do anything with it. Okay. I have more ideas. I'll tell you later. Very cool. It's all very exciting. I know this next question will most likely not be an evergreen topic like the other stuff that we've talked about, but it has been in the news, and that's tariffs. And like it has the potential to impact like basically almost everything in the economy. So like, how do you think about that? Are you doing anything to like prepare just in case? And it's been a roller coaster ride, I think. And I don't watch the news, so I think we're at a more chill, time, because I know the stock market came back a little bit. But anyway, tariffs, any thoughts?
Yes. So it's definitely something that is on everyone's mind in the print-on-demand space. And it's interesting because I do have people keep asking me, should we be concerned? Should we be concerned? And I think the hard part is we just don't know yet. So I think some things that I'm thinking about just going in, as I said, to the second half of the year is what's great about print on demand, I should say, is that you're able to pivot, right? So, you know, I've sold a couple of the same products as my predominant products. And now this year, my goal has been incorporating some of these other products. And I think looking at, okay, what are our options? What print providers are USA based, sourced in the US, you know, as an option? Like, I know these are here. If I need to change where, you know, I'm getting my products from, Printify has been very communicative so far. They have said they're not raising any prices at the moment. Obviously, that could change. But I think the other thing too is, as you said, if it happens, it's going to affect everything. And so it's not just going to be print on demand that's impacted. And so prices will go up, you know, other places also. So I think it's just staying alert to what's going on, thinking about, you know, are there companies or print partners within Printify? And they've been communicating too about this, like, which ones will go up the most? Are there products I should focus on in the event that that does happen? So it's just kind of being aware, but I would say it hasn't, everyone I've spoken to in the space, it hasn't changed a ton about what they're doing at the moment. It's more just having the knowledge and staying alert, reading the emails from Printify, what's going on, you know, are things changing? And so far that hasn't been the case. So I would say though, like I said, the positive about POD is that you have the ability to pivot. You have the ability to try something else, to use a different print partner if you had to. And so there are some options there, maybe not ideal, but there are options. And it's unfortunate, I think, mostly for handmade sellers on Etsy who do have to source materials from certain places. I think they will be hit the hardest. I think that's going to be really hard. But POD, you know, we do have the ability to kind of switch and move around and change course a little bit without having to completely change our whole business. So that is a positive in the sense that we have that flexibility, which is nice.
Very good. Okay. I think we covered the main stuff that I wanted to get into. Is there anything else that you want to mention that I forgot to ask about?
I don't think so. I think what I always like to say, and I probably said this last time, is if this is something, you know, that anyone is interested in, that someone has thought about or wants to pursue, that it's just wild. Like I said, I've spent a lot more time researching in the last few months than I had the last year or so. And to see the new shops that I'm seeing, and when I say new shops, I mean they're 6 months old, 8 months old, less than a year old, these shops on Etsy that are making killer sales. And there's still so much opportunity. I think there's so many myths out there about the print on demand space that, you know, Etsy's fees are too high, there's too much competition, you can't make sales anymore. And if you see some of these shops in the research, it's just wild how that's not true. I mean, there's just so much opportunity still out there. And like I said, I mean, I know I'm a more established shop now, a couple years old, but selling brand new product types in different areas than I had before, and they're selling consistently. And so, I mean, there's definitely so much opportunity still out there. And I always like to say that busting Etsy myths is one of my favorite hobbies, because there's just so much misinformation out there, and like anything else. And I think it just takes that time to dig in. Like you said, finding those underserved areas, doing that research is really the foundation for that. And even May 2025, like there's just so much availability out there in the market still.
You're making me get excited about this stuff again. So
yay.
I won't be as lazy. All right. Okay. This is awesome. So like I mentioned before, you have a course out there. I'm an affiliate. We'll put a link out there. There's also a free workshop, and that's the right place for folks to start, right?
Yes. The free workshop is called Gifting Gold, and it really just goes over the strategies a little bit that I've talked about today, but more in depth about gifts and micro niching and how to sell print on demand. And it's a really great place to start if you just want to learn a little bit more and just see if it might be the right fit for you.
Very good. And I think you have your YouTube channel up already?
Not yet. So I will be launching a YouTube channel this summer. And so I will definitely keep you posted when that launches. But I'm excited to be able to share more content in an accessible way for people that are interested in this avenue, print on demand, giftable products, keyword research, Etsy, all the things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited about that to be able to share. Right now I am on Instagram at Ecom Emily. And so I'm able to share stuff there, but obviously it's more limited. And so being able to do long form content, I think will be really helpful for people.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You have an invite for whenever you got that launch, but if people follow Yay. You, they'll be able to, you know, find it whenever you do launch the channel. Very fun. Well, thanks, Emily. Really appreciate it. Always fun to catch up.
Yes. You too. Thanks for having me.